Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia Jr. Thank you guys for joining us. We have a very, very special episode, and we have two very special guests. It's our first time having two guests on the podcast, so we're extremely excited. With me, as always, is the incomparable Jennifer Wollman. Jennifer, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome. By the way, I think I've used that adjective before,
but you gotta give me a break. Dinged for using the same word more than once.
Exactly. Jennifer, would you introduce our special guest?
So today we are lucky enough to interview Andres del Coral and Juan Ruiz, and they are vice chairman of Blanca Commercial Real Estate. I can't even call you guys boutique anymore because you're not boutique anymore. You are an amazing commercial real estate firm here in Miami-Dade, and they also go up. You'll tell us where you go up, but I know you guys do a lot of stuff up Palm Beach and Broward as well. And before we get started, I just wanted to congratulate you on your two NAIOP awards. Amazing broker team of the year and office lease transaction of the year. Amazing. Congrats.
Thank you. We're very honored to receive those awards from NAIOP and alongside our clients, Nuveen and the asset management and property management team here that made the Assurant deal happen. It was really exciting. We were actually here with them yesterday and they were touring their space. They've got three full floors with a cutout between two floors. So it's a true testament to a real Class A suburban deal for Waterford Business District. So we're very proud of that deal.
Awesome. And I know you and Fernando have done work at Waterford, and we can get into that a little bit later. But first, I want you guys each to take some time to tell us a little bit about yourselves, where you grew up, what you did before real estate, how you got into real estate, and what do you like to do other than real estate, if anything?
Age before beauty.
Age before beauty. Juan Ruiz, I'm a vice chair, as you all mentioned, with Blanca Commercial Real Estate. Been with the firm for now 13, almost 14 years. The firm is 16 years old. We recently celebrated our 16th birthday. I think I was employee number six when I came in. I think there's a team of 50 of us now.
Number six on the call sheet, number one in your hearts.
Yeah, there you go.
Number one in our hearts, exactly. But I was born in Medellin, Colombia, grew up in Southern California. A funny story, but I actually, grew up in California in the late 80s, early 90s. We started living between Colombia and California. And then in the early 90s, I ended up moving. Our whole family moved back to Colombia. Crazy time to move back, but ended up living in Medellin. Went to college for my undergrad in Medellin. Ended up getting my first job there at a lingerie company, Colombia's largest lingerie company. So it was like the Victoria's Secrets of Colombia. Marketing job there. Very fun job. Didn't make a lot of money, but had a great time working. Then was offered a job here at the Miami Free Zone. So it was in logistics that I started. When I moved to Miami, import-export, kind of working with U.S. Customs. That Miami Free Zone was sold to a partnership between Codina and Prudential Insurance. That went from being a import-export job to being a real estate job. For Codina and Prudential, that was a 600,000 square feet of retail warehouse and office. My then boss, the CEO, came in and said, hey, we need somebody to lease all this stuff, recommend somebody. And I ended up recommending somebody, funny enough, that used to work for a company that Andres's dad owned. This was in, I think, 2000, so 25 years ago. The person I recommended didn't lease. And they said, hey, this person didn't lease anything. We need you to do her job in here. So I ended up doing my logistics business, my logistics job. And having a lease, I had no idea how leasing worked. I didn't know that commercial real estate even existed. And I was able to lease a bunch of space. They said, oh, you're doing a great job leasing all this space. Keep doing it. That was then sold to a fund that was managed by, I think, Magic Johnson back then. And they ended up saying, this is selling. What do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to go into brokerage. I had no idea how the brokerage business even worked. Codina had just launched the Downtown Doral project. They were taking 30 buildings, tearing 30 buildings down to make way for Downtown Doral. And I was lucky enough to be able to come in as a broker and participate on that. So basically a logistics job turned into a real estate job. And here I am 25 years later.
That's amazing. What a great story. And I love how many commercial real estate stories start out what appears to be unrelated and with people. I knew nothing about commercial real estate. I knew nothing about my leases. I know nothing about leasing or selling. And all of a sudden, here you are 25 years later. That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. Andres, how about you?
So I was born in Miami. I'm a native Miamian. Born and raised on the Key, on Key Biscayne.
You're the one.
I'm the one.
You're affectionately known as a Key Rat.
I am a Key Rat, absolutely. Proud of it. I went to school here my whole life. I ended up going to college at Boston University and studied film and television, which is interesting enough, very similar to Juan. Started on a completely different path. My first job out of college was in Los Angeles working on the show Fear Factor. I was a production assistant, driving around Madagascan screeching cockroaches through the deserts of California. Yeah, it was pretty much I wouldn't even call it a glorified blue collar job, but it was really hard work for very low pay. And I really, really missed Miami. You can only imagine. Everybody now knows the secret, but I knew it before. I knew Miami was an extremely special place, especially after living in Boston and Los Angeles. So I hurried back and was looking at work in film and television. However, the industry was a lot smaller than Los Angeles. And a friend of mine that I've been friends with since day one, since we were born, was working at a boutique real estate firm that specialized in industrial called the Doran Jason Group, which is...
Oh, wow. That goes back.
Yeah. So I started there as an assistant to a few of the brokers, eventually assisting about 8 brokers at one point. Met what I consider my first mentor in the real estate business, George Davila. So shout out to George and Eileen as well, because she was a huge motivator. Eileen told me one day, she's like, you need to go find a place in Brickell. And so funny enough, I got my master's at FIU. I was the first cohort of the downtown program, alongside one of our biggest competitors, Ryan Holtzman. We did all our projects together. He's now with Cushman, and we have buildings literally across the street from each other, but we're still really good friends. Andrew Trench, his partner as well, was at Gulliver with me. So it's funny enough, I think we're the 3 born and raised brokers here. And ultimately got that master's and started working for Alan Ojeda, the developer of 1450 Brickell, amongst many other projects. I was kind of a jack of all trades for him. And that's how I met Terry and Danette. They had started the firm, and 1450 Brickell was their first assignment. They were a team of 3 alongside Rosa, which was Terry's assistant for many, many years. And I acted as the 4th member of the team. Once 1450 was built, we were in the middle of the recession. Alan asked me what I wanted to do next because he wasn't going to be building anything. And I told him I wanted to join Terry. So his question was just, what would you bring to the table for Terry? I told her, I told him that I would be, that they need a workhorse. And so soon enough, I was working on the team, and I've been a workhorse ever since. And I will be in December at the firm for 15 years. I think Juan here pretty much at 14 years. Yeah. So we've been there
from
the start.
Yeah. From the beginning.
So awesome. Juan is number 6. What number are you?
I was number 5, pretty much.
Number 5.
Yeah.
Wow. Number 5. That's awesome. Yeah.
Besides Rosa and 2 other brokers that are no longer with us, we were, besides, at this point, it's Terry, Danette, Linares, our partner, and then Juan and myself. Soon after, we started recruiting, and we have tons of other great brokers, like Chris Herrick, who heads up our tenant rep practice, and we've expanded even further and started to do property management as well as project management and, you know, just expanding our lines of service.
Medical practice as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
That we now have with Christy heading up that practice.
I think it's awesome that we're speaking to both of you now, for not just because we're going to get into office, but tell me a little bit what it looked like, because originally you guys only focused in office, right? That's all you did was office sales and leasing, right?
So both of us started our career kind of in industrial. So we both started our careers in Doral, Andres with Duran Jason, and I started at the Miami Free Zone with Codina. I'm one of the brokers to come out of Codina.
Right.
That was an amazing team as well.
Your brokerage starting with Blanca Commercial, right? Because you guys were there
starting
for the
with Blanca's office.
So just maybe walk us through a little bit what that growth looked like, what it started out with, looking like, what some of the challenges were, other than that you guys were starting during the Great Recession. Walk us through a little bit about what that looked like then and now.
So the first assignment, as we mentioned, was 1450 Brickell. That was a Cushman and Wakefield assignment. Terry was the head of the Southeast Florida office, and she brought that assignment over along with Danette and kicked off that leasing. The next two assignments that we went after was 396 Alhambra and Coral Gables, which was being developed by Agave Holdings, which is still a client of ours till this day. And we can discuss the Plaza Coral Gables and their other building, 2601 Bayshore, later on in the call. But the third one was One Park Square in Doral, which Masood Shawani from Shoma Homes was building. And so what was interesting about all three of those is those are all local, almost, I wouldn't call them family office, but local developers that didn't have national platforms and didn't necessarily have to or feel inclined to use one of the big four, the big five, you know, your CBREs, your JLLs, your Cushmans, or your Colliers. So we really had an advantage there, not to mention that we were basically taking on the nicest, newest buildings in each of the submarkets, which we were extremely successful. Once we got that ball rolling, and we had those huge successes, especially coming out of the recession, we were able to pitch and continue to win more business and won. I want to talk about some of those wins.
For me, it was funny because when I was first starting, I had met Terry at Codina. We worked together. As I was coming in, she was leaving to run the Cushman office. So when I was looking to make a move, I had been at Codina for many years. I was seeing the transition at Codina, which, by the way, that was my first mentor. I had Codina's CFO, Jorge San Miguel. I got the opportunity to start my career working with Codina, with his daughter, Anna Codina. So I had amazing mentors. Ford Gibson, there was a group of people at Codina that I think I learned from the best. Terry, everybody that was there at that point. But I'd been speaking to Terry for a couple of years. And when I first was considering going to Blanca, I met with several brokers and a lot of people that I would get their thoughts. And one of the comments that I kept getting, you know, over and over again was, you're never going to get institutional business if you go to a boutique firm. Institutional landlords give all their business to the CBs, to the JLLs, you know, to the top brokerage firms or to the national brokerage firms. When we first got in, our first big pitch was for 1111 Brickell that Prudential owned. And I think after that, that was the first big win for us after the ones that Andres mentioned. And after that, I mean, if you look at our client roster, it's DRA, Blackstone, TA, every single big institutional.
Nuveen, Allianz,
PIMCO.
EQ, which is Blackstone. I mean, now we're ingrained from on both of those. I mean, those clients that we mentioned earlier are still clients that we've grown. And now we have a ton of institutional clients as well.
But that was the biggest, that was the one comment I would always get from everybody I would ask, hey, what are your thoughts? For me, it was very much an emotional decision. I think if you, in this business, if you work hard and you're honest and you're going to make money no matter where you go, right? It's going to work. But that was the one comment I kept getting, you're never going to get institutional business. So it was very satisfying that we would go into these pitches with these institutional ownership groups and get these listings.
And what do you think you did differently that allowed that versus the big?
I think we came in with some great case studies, and we came in with strategies that not only had worked at other assets, But I think when we can, one of the things that we do differently, we don't have silos at Blanca. We don't have set teams. I mean, I work on a lot of buildings with Andres. Andres works with Danette. I work with Chris. I work with Danette. We all work together. And what we do when we approach an assignment is go, you know, who brings the best skill set for this particular assignment? Who is going to bring the best results? What team is going to bring the best results for the client? We're always looking out for how is the client going to benefit?
Yeah.
You know, how do we assemble the best team for this? And it's always worked out.
I will say we looked at the asset, but we also looked at the clients and really dug in to understand what the investment profile of that client is. Are they cash flow driven? Are they value driven? Is this a 5-year hold? Is this a legacy hold? And by understanding that, you can craft what the execution on that is going to be. Be honest, be realistic, and be personable with the presentation. We did get coaching on our presentations. We had people come in and help us craft pitches very early on. And so we got very good at that. And we're constantly training. There's always, Terry is always ingraining new education into what we do. Most recently, we did one, literally just a session on storytelling. I don't know if we're doing a good job at that right now, but we did do a nice little storytelling session. How do you build empathy while presenting and creating a bond and a relationship so that, you know, it all comes down to trust at the end of the day, trust in what you're saying and trust in being able to execute.
So before we get into the specifics of office, I wanted to say, I find it interesting that there's all these connections to the film industry, because I think Anna Codina is a filmmaker, right? She created a documentary a few years back, if I'm not mistaken.
One of her sisters.
Okay. And then you, Andres, come from, you know, really a background in film. And 1450, that was developed by the Rylea Group, right? And I think his son was in the film industry also. So like, and the fact that we're talking about storytelling. So
Diego Ojeda, Alan Ojeda's son, and I are also, have been friends since preschool. So I did get that job a little bit through nepotism. However,
hey, listen,
he was my roommate at Blanca.
You worked hard since preschool. You've been working on that assignment, man.
Yeah, you know. Talk about working on relationships.
You've been interviewing for 20 years.
Yeah, man.
No, we were at BU together. We did the film school together. We were roommates at one point. We were not in LA at the same time. I went first. I'm older and I left, and he stuck it out and was able to put together a really great movie called Mancora. One day he called me. He's like, "Hey, what do you like about real estate?" And honestly, it was a 3-hour conversation. And soon after, he was working for his dad, and I was looking for a new job.
I love it. That's wonderful. You know, we try to, the subtitle of our podcast is Demystifying Commercial Real Estate. So we want to get a little bit into the technicalities of representing office and what all those things entail. Can you give us a little bit of breakdown of how office on the commercial side of things is different than all the other asset classes?
Which I think for one, right, it's very capital intensive. So when we look at office, nowadays, when we do a deal, I mean, it's interesting. It looks like the amount of work that goes into an office deal, right? When you compare it to other, I think, asset classes, we look at the step by step. I mean, I sit down with Andres. We were before this, you know, we sit down, we work on several assignments together. We're going, all right, we split up the deals. You know, as deals come in, we kind of look at what the workflow is and go, okay, well, Andres goes, hey, I'm going to run with this deal. You take this one. Hey, there's this tour. We depending on what relationships we have with the different brokers or the different companies that we're looking at, but we're constantly dealing with space planning with architects. We're working on touring. We're working on meetings with the attorneys, reviewing leases. We're working with the GCs on pricing build outs and seeing if there's anything that's existing that we can reuse, if there's value in the space so that you're not completely gutting the space and rebuilding it. But from an ownership standpoint, you know, it's not uncommon that we built out a space for a tenant and the space to build out cost a couple million dollars. It was a 5 or 7 year lease. That lease expired. There's now a new tenant, and the new tenant tells us, nothing that's in the space works for us. Knock it down and build it out again. So just one of the interesting things that I find with Office is that unless you have very deep pockets, it's very hard to compete in this asset class, which is why most of the bigger building, it's institutional ownership, because you have to have very deep pockets and be able to hold on to these assets for a long time to get your return. So I think it's very capital intensive. You also have to have very patient money, because depending on the condition of the market and how much inventory there is, it's not uncommon to have space that sits vacant for a while, right? It's not, 2,000 square foot flex space that is constantly turning over and you're leasing very quickly. So those are just some of the variables that we deal with in Office right now. After, say, COVID, for example, with everything that's, I think we're the most affected by work from home and all the hybrid work schedules and all that. Office, I think Miami, without a doubt, is the hottest office market in the entire country. So we definitely benefited. For us, it could have been a huge disaster, COVID, as it has been in other markets. We're seeing a huge trend in most of our tenants. I mean, our portfolio is probably close to 15 million square feet of office space that we handle. So we're constantly tracking and interviewing our tenants, anything from mom and pop, small and companies to Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies. And most of those companies will tell you they're getting their employees to come back to the office. But after COVID, as hot as Miami is an office market, we've seen a huge flight to quality trend. So the better located, the most amenitized, the nicer, the most expensive buildings, believe it or not, are the buildings that are leasing the quickest. So companies are going, hey, if I'm going to want my employees to come back to the office, I've got to be in a cool neighborhood that's got restaurants and fitness concepts. And, I've got to be in areas and in buildings where my employees are going to want to come. So those buildings are the ones that are leasing. So if you own, Class B buildings that are not situated as nicely and not as amenitized, those buildings right now
are going to suffer
and are suffering. So it's you've got to be patient. You've got to have a lot of capital to be able to compete in the space.
I think Juan just nailed it with the word patience. The deals, especially the larger ones, they take a long time. When you're building out the space, you are designing, getting estimates from real general contractors that are going to subcontractors. You need to make sure those numbers are tight. And then you're going in for permitting, and tenants aren't taking the space. From the time they sign the lease, they might be moving in 9 months later. So you're looking at commissions that are paid in the second half when the tenant moves in. So just really patient from a broker's perspective, right? We're talking about what the difference between office and other asset classes are like. The deals take longer. Tenants moving in takes longer. And those are on the larger deals for the most part. Sometimes you have smaller deals. But with smaller deals, you have the kind of a spec suite need, where tenants that are 5,000 or 3,000 square feet and less need spaces to move into right away. But just to back up a second, to be clear, Juan and I on the office side mainly deal with leasing, right? So the difference between leasing and maybe selling office space is one thing. On the office side of things, when a building, it's typically an entire building. There is some condos out there, but the majority of the market is owned by a single entity and is leased. And so when you're leasing versus a sale, you are putting together a landlord and a tenant who are going to be together for a few years. It's a relationship that must continue over time. So these lease contracts are 40 to 150 page long versus a purchase and sale contract, where you're really just trying to get through a due diligence period. Ultimately, there's a few thresholds to get through, deposits and so on and so forth, and financing sometimes. And then ultimately that deal is closed and done. So we have been on assignments for 15 years in certain cases, and we've renewed tenants two or three times over. So it's important as a broker to just kind of always be there, always be under assignment. Even if it's 100% lease, you're just kind of always maintaining communication with the existing tenants, with the landlords, with the property managers, making sure everybody's happy. Because when it comes around to renewing them, you want to make sure that their stay there has been great. So it's a real talk about adding patience to the whole thing.
So a lot of you have heard me talk on this podcast about my longest lease deal ever from the time signed a commission, and that was with Andres. It was right. It was during COVID, and it was the city of Coral Gables, and it was a tenant out of New York. It was
a phenomenal institution, but they definitely take their time doing deals.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, you talk about patience. That was like, listen, it was like Chinese water torture. It was just like so slow, but it was a great experience. Everybody was like, nobody was, yeah, never really got contentious or anything, but it was just a weird time and took forever. And it's a beautiful space.
Absolutely.
It came out beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jennifer, I mean, that was a really interesting deal because it was mixed-use development where we were doing two different uses within a large space with an institutional owner that had a brand partner, and I believe it was Adidas, and then it went right to Legends. So we had a lot of moving parts. And chefs in the kitchen. But I went in there with my son the other day to get some gear, and it was awesome. I was very proud to be in this space.
Isn't it an awesome space? Yeah, me too. Every time I drive by, I'm like, yay, my long.
So everybody knows that's at the Thesis, where they have the Thesis Hotel.
Yeah, the Thesis Hotel.
And residences across the street from the university. The University of Miami has a really cool, call it swag shop there. So you can get all your gear before going to the game.
Yeah, really cool. And a beautiful space that came out beautifully. So again, you learn so much because to your point, every lease is so totally different and so many pages, right, that no lease is exactly the same. Even if you had the same kind of boilerplate lease, the parties are different. So
we are unashamedly big fans of the two of you and of working with your firm. One of the things that I would like to touch on is talk to me a little bit about mindset, because I've always felt that you both have a layer of patience, a willingness to educate, a willingness to find where is the win-win scenario, and to really make sure that the focus is on the relationship ultimately that is going to be had between the tenant and the landlord. Do you think that that is informed by the fact that, you know, your assignments are long term, that you're working with landlords that are going to be holders of the property for many, many years, and they're going to be stewards of that? Or does it come from another place? You know, would love for you to speak a little bit on that.
I have a funny perspective. So I always, every deal that I work on, every phone call that I get, every broker that I talk to, I always, in my mind, right? Like I always say, if I were an owner of real estate and I have brokers, I would have people call them just to see how they treat them. Like I would have people call and just say, hey, pretend you're a tenant, pretend you're a broker and you have a requirement, pretend you have a crappy requirement and see how my broker treats you. So every person I deal with, in my mind, my client is having somebody. So I always pretend like, hey, if I were an owner of the real estate that I'm representing, how would I want my broker to be treating this person? So you're
basically saying every call you get, you're like it could be a secret shopper.
I am. That's exactly what I do. And I
think that's wonderful. That's brilliant.
I always treat it like that because there are a lot of things like, listen, this isn't rocket science. And most businesses are not rocket science either. But I call a lot of businesses where I don't understand anything about the business. And I love it when I call and I ask a dumb question, which to me is not a dumb question. And I get, you know, a respectful answer. And that person's probably thinking, oh, what a dumb question. But they're courteous enough to give me a nice answer. And I don't know. I feel that whatever you put out there is what you get. And usually when I deal with people, I get nice people. So I don't know, but that's the way I approach it. And I also find that this is a very small industry. And I find that I deal with people over and over and over again. What has gotten me the best results in this business has been treating people nicely and fairly and just being cool with everybody I deal with. I've gotten a ton of deals where, well, I'll give you an example. A lot of deals that we have done, and I think it happens to Andres as well, are tenants that are represented by residential realtors. And we sometimes have never met the residential realtors. We'll get calls. And if I call a residential realtor about a residential transaction, they are specialists in that field and I have no clue. And I'm hoping they'll educate me in that field, right? We do the same thing. They'll call us and they'll say, hey, I don't know anything about office. Can you? And we'll walk them through step by step and we'll make it super easy. That those residential realtors who are specialists in their field, the next time they do an office deal, they'll call us again. And they'll say, hey, I want to do this deal with you because the last time we dealt with you, it was just great. It was an easy transition. So I don't know. I think it pays off. And again, I'm always thinking it's the secret shopper. So,
yeah. Well, I didn't want to interrupt. I don't know if Andres wanted to chime in a little bit about mindset.
No, go.
I was just saying that we, Juan and I had two interesting deals. And one of them, you know, the building had just changed ownership. And to give you an idea, the signature had to be done by a party in Singapore. And it didn't take us a long time to negotiate the deal. It took a long time to actually get ink on paper and just finalize the deal. But what was really great is that it didn't matter how complicated or how hairy the deal got. I knew that I was going to have a positive conversation with Juan and that we were both going to be upfront and honest about what each party felt about what was going on and that we were going to try to figure it out. And that, I think, goes an incredible long way. And I really enjoy working with people that have a long-term view of their careers, right? And a long-term view of the work that we do.
And I had a similar experience with Andres where it was, I think, 396. It was the Agave Group's 396 building where I brought in a tenant that I had convinced him. He wanted to be in Brickell, and I convinced him, no, I'll show you Brickell, but where you really need to be is Coral Gables. Yeah. And, we fell in love with this building, but there was an exclusive in it for his business use. And I think this is where relationships come to play because not only was it Blanca's relationship with the group that owns the building, it was also their relationship with the tenant that had the exclusive. And my tenant had a very good relationship with the ones who had the exclusive, and we were able to get the deal done. And my client called me a year later and was like, oh my God, we are in the best place. My employees have never been so happy because we're a 20-minute drive versus a 2-hour commute to the airport. So tell us a little bit. I know you guys just got your first quarter report done, right? Can you tell us a little bit about some of the insights there and maybe some of the cool projects you're working on?
Sure. So Miami continues to be very exciting in the office sector. Miami-Dade is outperforming 2024 this year. Essentially, we've seen 929,000 square feet of deals done just in this quarter, which is the strongest since the first quarter of 2022. And 2022 first quarter was really a pent-up demand crawling out of COVID. The net absorption is 196,000 square feet, which is mainly attributed to Miami Airport and Coral Gables. Coral Gables did a large City National Bank deal and a Nicholas Children's deal, which are really exciting. And on top of that, you know, everybody knows the Amazon deal that signed at Wynwood Plaza for 50,000 square feet. So we're seeing it across all major submarkets, and it's, you know, the same as rents continue to go up, vacancy continues to go down. The number of tenants in the market are projecting continued strong demand. So it's not just a blip on the radar. And so there's new construction coming out of the ground. As Juan mentioned, there's a lot of flight to quality. So these new buildings are not only capturing record rates, like the Coral Gables deal that UBS did at $42.25, which just was a home run deal, even more than what we did at the Plaza, which is really, really spectacular for that submarket. Which is really catching wind.
Yeah, so put a little bit in perspective, the quarterly average of leasing activity over the last 5 years is about 770,000 square feet. This quarter, to Andres's point, it was 929. So it's much higher than the quarterly average of the 5 years. Yet last year was a little slower. We tend to see activity slow down during election years just because of that uncertainty. So activity's back. rental rates continue to increase. So every time there is a new building getting delivered on Brickell, for example, Brickell continues to be the market driving rental rates, right? A lot of that is because when we see the new to market activity, the companies that are coming from other states, the bulk of the focus is on Brickell. Brickell is a big brand. It's a renowned, it's the Wall Street of the South. So a lot of the financial services firms want to be there. A lot of the new to markets, the Citadels of the world, those companies want to be on Brickell. So that market continues to drive rates. When you look at markets like Brickell, Coconut Grove is an incredibly hot market. Anything that gets built in that submarket gets leased at record rates. Miami Beach, a lot of the executives, business owners end up living on Miami Beach as well. So those markets drive the rates also. Those rates are now, I mean, you're seeing deals in Brickell that could reach $150 a square foot. I mean, that's on par with the New York City. Those are New York rates, right? So when you start seeing rates that are that high, that drives rates for the other submarkets. So that's what's happened with like Coral Gables. When you're hitting those rates on Brickell, companies start going, okay, well, I don't know if I have to pay $150 or $120 on Brickell. So let me consider Coral Gables. A lot of my employees live there. Our C-suite lives in Coral Gables. It starts pushing rates for Miami Airport, for Coral Gables, for some markets like Aventura, for example. So we're seeing rates continue to go up in all the submarkets. Vacancy rates are down. So I would say this year so far, the two top submarkets where we're seeing the bulk of the activity have been, and just because Brickell doesn't have a lot of vacancy at this point. So Coral Gables and Miami Airport. Miami Airport had been a market that had been a little more stagnant. Miami Airport, for example, is Doral, includes an area close to Medley, and then Waterford Business District. Waterford's a little different. Waterford always gets a lot more activity just because it's central and it pulls from the different submarkets. You were seeing more activity kind of Coconut Grove, Brickell, Wynwood has always been hotter. So far this year, Coral Gables and Miami Airport have been the two markets seeing the most activity. At Waterford Business District, for example, we represent Nuveen and PIMCO with their portfolio. I think we have increased our ask rates by about 46% over the last 5 years and our take rates by 60%. That's in addition to the operating expenses that have gone up as well. So it's...
Well, speak a little bit about that, because over the last few years, you've had to deal with the, you know, inflationary pressure on the building cost. So the build out cost, do you see that leveling at all? Is it continue to increase? It's not at all, right? It continues to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to gauge that cost, because most of these build outs are done, especially for the larger tenants, they're specific to, you know, a corporate finished package that can vary greatly between different companies. But we do spec suite programs, and where we used to build $75 square foot spec suites, we're now looking at $100 to $110 a square foot. And these are nice spec suites. They are Class A grade, but they are not the Taj Mahal, you know, pretty straightforward, no exposed ceilings or anything like that. Once in Wynwood, we are doing spec suites that have exposed ceilings and some upgrades beyond that, and they just continue to drive up. It's closer to $150 a square foot. So we know that. I know when I started, we did some spec suites at One Park Square. I think they were like at $40 a square foot. Now, granted, that was, you know, 13 years ago, but it's been a continued increase in cost of construction throughout Miami-Dade County. I think that's attributed to a number of factors, and one of them being demand for the area. We have a continued migration here, so people are buying, building homes and offices and, you know, everything in between. So we have to mitigate that to a certain extent. Institutional owners have to mitigate that, and part of that mitigation is done through increased rents. You know, with the demand, it's kind of all rising together.
So just a quick follow-up, because I know you guys are always training, you have a pulse on the market, and more importantly, understanding how the macro, you know, sometimes influences the micro. What of the conversation of the tariffs are you?
Yeah, so that, I was just going to mention that. One of the things we're dealing now just with build-outs in general, right, is when we are negotiating a deal. So we are going through several rounds of negotiations. And sometimes, you know, these things are taking 7, 8, 9 rounds of negotiations back and forth. And towards the end of the LOI negotiations, a tenant or a potential tenant will tell us, okay, now we want you to price our build out. So get a reputable GC to give us an idea of what the build out costs before we agree to terms, right? So now we are tasked with getting accurate enough pricing so that we are giving our potential tenant accurate enough pricing so that when the pricing does come in after we sign the deal, it's within range, right? And it's not, we're not lowballing them. But we're also being very careful not to give them a number that scares them away, which is much higher than it's really going to be. And we're working with the GCs now because the GCs are very concerned about these tariffs and they're now building in a bunch of contingencies. So we're going to the GCs and going, hey, we know you guys are frightened by the tariff situation. We understand you guys have to put in contingencies, but please keep those moderate because what you're doing is you're potentially scaring away a potential tenant. So everybody's trying to balance what could potentially happen with not scaring away tenants, scare tactics at the end of the day. So everybody, the GCs are very concerned and we're having a very hard time putting pricing to these, with these pricing exercises for build outs, because nobody knows what is going to end up happening with the price of steel, you know, and everything else.
Along those lines with the low vacancy rates, how are you guys dealing with tenant improvements? Are you, because that goes into both, right? It goes into not only the fact that there's so much demand, but also the pricing there on the opposite side, right? On the credit you give a tenant for build out. Are you seeing a lot of TIs being given or are they being more moderated? Or I know retail's they're not doing hardly any.
No, I think office, especially the institutional owners who have more of a value play, are inclined to give stronger TI packages than more of the family cash flow driven groups. So you do have that kind of different investor profile in how much TI and free rent for that matter they're giving. But with the value players, they give the TI up front. It's, you know, it's a rear view liability. So they're really capitalizing off of the face rate and the term of the lease and the credit level of the tenants. So it goes without saying that they would give high TI packages for credit tenants on long-term deals, which is essentially what creates the value on the building, especially if they're planning to exit kind of on a private equity play after 5 or 7 years.
Yeah, and most of the tenants that we are dealing with across the board and in all the submarkets and all the assets that we're working on tend to prefer to pay a little bit of a higher rate, but not be out of pocket for TI, right? So we're finding ourselves, they'll say, hey, I'll pay a few dollars more in rate, but you know, can you increase the TI allowance a bit more? One of the things that we're doing as well is we're giving free rent as part of these deals. So it's not uncommon that if you sign a 5-year lease, you'll get, you know, 2 to 4 months of abatement, of rent abatement as part of the deal. And we will sometimes let tenants use or convert that free rent into additional TI allowance. Because one of the things that we are seeing is that most tenants prefer not to spend their own money on the build outs. If you do a big deal on Brickell with a big law firm or a big financial institution, those companies are more open to. They'll come in with more money to spend on build outs. Although we are seeing, you know, we're representing a couple of big companies, law firms and financial services firms at Blanca that are, as part of their negotiations, asking the landlord to cover turnkey build outs or deliver turnkey build outs. But a lot of big financial institutions will come in prepared to cover part of that cost. But for the most part, most small or medium sized companies want to avoid paying for the build outs. Yeah. So we're having to give a little more in TI.
Perfect. What are you guys working on now that is really exciting you? Either a market or a specific building or lease. It doesn't have to be names if you can't name people. But
I love the kind of placemaking or just the when you're starting a building or you're rebranding a building or you're bringing in new amenities and you're adding, you know, what do the tenants want? Are we, you know, you're redoing we've got an amazing project in Aventura, the Old Towers Project. Three buildings, an acre of green space, LEED Platinum, a lap pool. And we sit down with the developer. It's a group out of Mexico City. And, you know, what do the tenants in this market appreciate? And they brought in, it's an incredible amenities. The Waterford Business District, which we mentioned, I mean, there's $25 million that have been invested over the last 5 years. And you're sitting across the street from the airport, right? You don't have the nearby amenities that a Brick or a Wynwood does. How do we bring in food trucks? How do we, what buildings do we put cafes in? Where do we put fitness centers in? Let's roll out a branded Tesla to drive executives to and from the airport or anywhere within a certain range. Let's create
outdoor areas. Outdoor areas where people can go and relax and be by the water because we have, it's, you know, the Blue Lagoons there around Waterford Business District. So
we are kicking off the leasing and the marketing of the Santander Tower on Brickell, which is going to be an amazing building. And that is, we're currently working. We get to be part of, you know, the calls with ownership and the architects and everybody else to look at how the whole thing, you know, the design from the start.
Yeah. I get to, after 20 years, get to work with Alan Ojeda again and Diego Ojeda, who are going to be the developers for Santander on that project. So that's very exciting. And I just to echo what Juan said, I also, and I know Danette Linares and Terry Blanco, I mean, we really get a lot of pride of being at the inception of these projects. I mentioned earlier when we did 396 Alhambra for Agave, and then we did One Park Square with Masood. I know Terry and Danette, that they started that one before I was with the team. I was in a different role for Terry before I joined the leasing side of that. But ultimately got to work on the Plaza Coral Gables alongside Danette Linares and Terry Blanca, where we did 450,000 square feet of office space in a mixed use project that included 300,000 square feet of retail in the heart of Coral Gables, which is where I live. And really got to see, you know, got to work on the Bacardi deal, the Apple deal, the HIG Capital. I mean, the names of the tenant roster in this project are just like next to none. And not to mention the retailers that went in. You have the restaurants like Mika and Fuego de Chao and Ceviche 105. There's also, you know, I mean, 300,000 square feet of retail, all service-based. You know, they didn't want you to come and buy a shirt or a bag there. What they wanted was for people to come and have experiences. So you've got art in public spaces, you've got activation like at Waterford and so on and so forth. So all that expertise that we have from all these, you know, new developments and ground up developments, we're really excited to do it now in a Brickell office high rise for an amazing client like Santander. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better assignment with Miami being the way that it is right now and how hot it is, and with the flight to capital behind that as well. But we're excited. I mean, if you look at the building 1401 Brickell right now, it's wrapped. They've started demoing slowly but surely and very safely because, you know, obviously it's in the heart of Brickell. It's a very pedestrian area. It's going to have a ton of retail, phenomenal amenities. And so that's, you know, Juan and I are extremely excited to be working on that and proud to be included on that team.
We're wrapping up, for example, the leasing of 545 Lynn. We're getting close to the finish line with leasing the last remaining spaces that we have there. But that was, you know, that was it's an amazing project as well. When we started leasing that, it was, how do we get, you know, Wynwood was a new market. It was the first Class A building that was built in Wynwood. How do we get these companies that are on Miami Beach, they're on Brickell, they're in these other kind of more documented submarkets, to come to a brand new submarket where there is really no Class A office. This is the first building. You turn around 5 years later and you've got buildings, got PwC, which you would have bet millions of dollars would have never gone to Wynwood. PwC's in there, Sony's in there. You know, you've got Wynwood's first trading floor, MIAX is in there. AB InBev, so you've got an amazing tenant roster.
Gensler and Slalom and It goes on and on.
You've got now another building that we don't lease. Cushman leases Windward Plaza that just signed Amazon. But now you have, you know, we recently had a tour in Wynwood with one of the music companies, right? You look at that market now and Universal Music is in there. Sony's in there. Spotify's in there. Amazon Music is there. So you go, wow, you just saw a market transform.
There was no office market there a few years ago. And now you have credit level groups. And that's a testament to a phenomenal ownership team, you know, Sterling Bay, who is the catalyst behind Fulton Market in Chicago, amongst a ton of other projects, partnering up with JP Morgan, and then ultimately having Blackstone as the lender. You know, if you start a tour like that, you know, you're gonna develop credibility. And then the key is to identify the different with a building like that. It's what are our differentiators that make us special, so that we're not a, you know, class A commodity and they're going to want to come over here.
And the Goldman family is another partner in that deal, which created the neighborhood, right? So you go, wow, this is, so it's been, I think more, one of the cool things that this industry gives us is we really get to experience, like, I feel that I didn't grow up in Miami, like Andres did, for example, right? I moved here in 99. Right. So I almost got into this industry immediately when I moved here. So what it's given me is kind of like a front row ticket to experience Miami's evolution from, like, I've seen this, the growth, and without a doubt, the city is completely different than what it was when I first got here. It's a real city.
No doubt. Yeah. It is a real city. Amen.
I want to thank you guys for joining us. And in closing, is there anything that you wish we'd asked you that we didn't, or anything that you want to share? Or you got it all out? We asked all the right questions.
You definitely asked all the right questions. And we really appreciate the invitation. This was my first podcast and really
mine too.
Special.
Yay!
Thanks for having us. Thanks for thinking of us.
What a great experience, and we appreciate you too.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your time. We know how busy you are. The knowledge that you shared with our listeners was amazing. Absolutely. I'm sure everybody's going to learn something. I definitely learned a lot. So thank you. And I look forward to our next deal together.
Absolutely, guys. And thank you for being amazing human beings. Yes, you really are. Exactly. And, you know, we're proud to know you and to get to work with you.
Same here.
So all the blessings, guys. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And for now, Jennifer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.